Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:13 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 27th. Well, we've had a very interesting day in here today, most particularly in the bond markets. We've also had a significant rebound off of an intraday low on Wall Street. Then the Brexit machinations continue to fascinate just about everyone. I was in a meeting yesterday with an Alaskan Indian tribe, and one of their biggest questions was how to profit from Brexit. That'll tell you just how far and wide the world is looking at the outlook for the Brexit question, what it means for Europe, how the world is faring in terms of growth. So there are big questions that are being asked all over. One thing we can see, for example, here on US 10-year Treasury yields is we've had a very significant rally in terms of prices, where the yield was 3.2% back in November, and it is 2.38% right now. So that has been a very significant decline in the yield. That was a clear breakdown from the range. A very good example of an explosion waiting to happen, and it was resolved on the downside. When we look at this on a weekly basis, there was potential that 2.5% would represent an area of resistance for the price. It has not. This has been a very clear breakdown, and obviously it is in conjunction with some clear fears about the trajectory of global growth and US growth, and also with the also, there's obviously a clear demand for some form of safe haven. So those are some of the more important factors. But one of the others is the clear commonality we're seeing in this drive into government bonds internationally. That's at complete odds with the bullish argument for yields, or the bearish argument for bonds, that was being propounded last year. And something I had a great deal of sympathy with was that there is a massive amount of new supply that's due to hit the markets. And one of the questions that we have all been asking has been, how is it that the world's governments are going to fund themselves when they have this massive amount of debt that needs to be rolled on? The adoption of fiscal stimulus represents a clear slug of additional new issuance that's coming on top of the refinancing requirements. And we do have a simple answer, and it is that central banks are willing to step in. And that is very clearly what we've seen from the Federal Reserve, that there has been this very large question about the cost of financing for the US government. Well, the Federal Reserve reducing its growth forecasts and saying very clearly that they're listening to the market and that there is obviously a clear risk from the funding requirements that both corporates and the government represent, well, then there is a clear now indication that the market expects another round of quantitative easing. And at the very minimum, that interest rates will drop for as long as it takes for this big refunding requirement to pass through the markets, and that could be a few years. Now, that's obviously beneficial for government bonds because it suggests that there is going to be a buyer of these bonds, and that is not just a US phenomenon. So, 10-year bonds were in negative territory as recently as last week, but then they compressed even further in here today, and they're down now to a negative 8 basis points. Well, this is taking us down to really quite bullish levels, and we haven't seen highs in terms of the price like this since 2016. If we look at the UK, I have to remember my tickers. That was always a game between myself and David, was which one of us could remember our Bloomberg tickers better. Well, we can see, for example, here that Gilt yields are back to 1%. This is the lower side of what is effectively a 2.5 year range, and there is a real prospect that we're going to see additional downside. The Bank of England has been really quite express in their intentions that they do want to raise interest rates, but there's such low possibility that they're going to be able to achieve that stated goal that I don't think that the strength that are the lagging of that we've seen in the UK market is going to persist much longer. There's clearly a catch-up move underway. Then when we look at what's going on in Australia, my Uber driver this morning on the way to the airport was an Australian chap, and he was lamenting the price of housing, the fact that the carbon credit that the government had imposed was putting about an extra $1,000 of costs on top of the electricity bill. When I talk to family in Melbourne, they are really looking at the property market very closely, and the fact that the property market has had a significant pullback is obviously one of the reasons why we've seen this move in terms of interest rates. There's a clear downward shift in terms of interest rate expectations in Australia, and that has taken the yield to a new all-time low. Now, it is overbought in the short term, so it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we could get some pause and consolidation, but the outlook is, I think, really quite clear that it is quite likely we're going to have additional compression in terms of yields. Now, when we look at the Australian dollar, then the 70 cents area has been an area of support for at least the last 6 months, but it was in weaker territory in here today, and I think there is the clear potential that if interest rates are going to compress in Australia, that we're going to see a weaker currency. Well, then that is probably good news for the resources sector, considering that they consolidate their earnings in US dollars, and the resources sector continues to hold the breakout from the range that persisted for most of 2018. Well, what we've also seen in here today is that the New Zealand government bond has also been rallying, and we've seen a very significant compression in terms of the yield. So when we talk about the move that we're seeing in government bonds, it is really, it's got very clear commonality internationally. That is highly reflective of a real search for yield, attempt to capture a yield against a background where there is an assumption that we're going to see further compression in interest rates. Well, that's obviously pricing in much slower growth. The bond market right now is very busy pricing in the potential for a recession. When we look at the 2-10 yield curve spread, it's right around 17 basis points. Now, some people are going to be tempted to look back at 1994 and say this is a similar condition to 1994 because it got right down but did not become inverted, and therefore this would suggest that we still have ample potential for the economy to re-accelerate and that there is still potential for the stock market to go into a bubble phase. So that's obviously the most bullish argument we can make. Then, of course, people are looking at the fact that the yield curve spread has been, since I was working at Bloomberg, they've changed the tickers for getting the yield curve. I used to be able to just type in IYC12I125 and get the Treasury's curve. Some people are going to be saying, for example, when you look at the yield curve, that we already have an inverted situation where the 1 year is pretty much a couple of basis points higher than the 10-year right now. In fact, it's really only 1.2 basis points higher. So that's already an inversion. And there's been a clear inversion between the 2 and the 5 year, for example, over the course of the last few months. So different parts of the curve have been inverting. And obviously that is that's bad news for the banking sector. And we have got evidence internationally of banks rolling over, particularly when we look at the S&P 500 banks index. That was an awfully large downside weekly key reversal that we had last week to confirm the succession of lower rally highs. If we look at, for example, what's going on in Australia and just looking at the banks rather than the financials, then what we're presented with is a downtrend that's been in evidence now for 2 years, and it is still trending downwards despite the fact that it has been rallying for much of the last 3 months. When we look at what's going on in the UK, well, obviously there are very big questions as to the form that Brexit is going to take, but it is still trading below the trend mean, and that is it's therefore still a distribution until proven otherwise. So a sustained move above the 4,000 level is going to really be required to confirm a return to demand dominance. I think we do need to see more than a decade of history now, but this does look like an awfully lengthy base formation. And it's a further example of the fact that after a massive crash like we had in 2008, that it is the banks or the assets that were closest to the epicenter of risk are the ones that are most likely to experience the type 3 ranging time and size type of base formation development. Usually after a massive decline like that, there is going to be a sector, there's going to be a part of the market that does substantially better. In the case of the financial sector, it was the asset managers. Because of asset price inflation, the fund managers, they don't look anything like the banks. And that's the same for the insurance companies, since the assets that they own have appreciated considerably over the course of the last decade. That's why I looked at the banking sector, just the banks in Australia, rather than the financials. And when we think about what's going on in Europe, well, there is a clear potential that we're going to see the ECB moving back into a period of quantitative easing. I think that's more likely than not. It's only really a case of how long it is going to take them. And I think that is the big determining factor in exactly what we can expect from markets. How long is it going to take the central banks to reverse interest rate, their course of action? If the central banks of the world, particularly the Federal Reserve, start to cut interest rates sooner rather than later, I think there is a solid argument that we may be able to avoid a recession and that this will be more like a 1994 exercise. If, on the other hand, we see that central banks wait, and that is what is perhaps the base case, is that they will wait for the simple reason that central banks, they tend to want to work with evidence. And a lot of the evidence that they look at is lagging by nature. So that generally results in central bank actions lagging the market by a significant margin. If we get a repeat of that type of situation on this occasion, then, well, there is a strong likelihood we are going to have a recession. So what we are starting to see, though, is that because the bond markets are pricing in the potential for rate cuts so aggressively, stock markets have been comparatively steady. I think the potential here is that stock market investors are betting that that we are not yet going to have a recession, and this is quite normal. This is exactly what we saw in 2005 and 6. The yield curve became inverted. There were a lot of people did not believe its predictive power, and the stock market rallied an additional 30% before we got the really significant pullback. And I think that's really worth paying particular attention to. If we go all the way back and look at the period from 2006 onwards, well, the market did have a short-term peak in May of 2005. And then from that peak, which was around 1,326, it rallied to 1,600, and then it rolled over. And that's what we've seen with a number of the inversions we've seen in terms of the yield curve. It's quite normal that we would see the market go through a period of weakness for a few months and then move onwards to new high ground. It's also worth considering that that's what we would anticipate from an inverted yield curve, that because it's such a long lead indicator for a recession, people tend to forget about it. And they're most particularly forget about it when the market moves to a new high. So that is when, in fact, we need to become even more diligent about the consistency of trends. But the other point I think is worth remembering is that we are in the first half of the third year of the US presidential cycle. And that is usually when we get a sell-off, which provides the fuel for a rebound in the latter half of the year, which contributes to the outperformance of the third year and the even better performance of the market in the fourth year of the presidential cycle. Obviously, 2008 was an exception in that regard, in terms of the very significant outperformance we would anticipate in the fourth year. But that is one exception in a long history of the market performing. And what we are already starting to see is evidence that having tightened up in the first part of the presidential cycle, that the Federal Reserve is now starting to ease again, heading into the latter half of the presidential cycle. And that is normal. That is exactly what we would anticipate from this particular cycle, which I think is why it is particularly worth mentioning now. Because there's not going to be much point in mentioning it by the time we get around to December. That would be retrospective. And obviously what we're trying to engage in is trying to predict what we can anticipate from these markets. So I think we have to be open to the potential that there is going to be an additional move higher in this market before we then get a recession. Even if we are to get a recession, it is not going to happen immediately. So that's, I think, one of the more important questions. Then, of course, it's worth keeping an eye on some of the leading cyclicals, and the semiconductors index, having got right up to the upper side of its range, has certainly paused around these levels, and it does have room in which to consolidate. Even if it is going to move higher from here, it does look like it is due some consolidation in here. And then with yields starting to come down, the allure of dividend-paying stocks is improving, so utilities moved on to new high ground, and they were in mildly weaker territory in here today, and there is a short-term overbought condition, but this does help to highlight that there is appetite for yield out there. And that's particularly true of the higher-yielding shares, but then also of the dividend aristocrat type of consumer staple-type companies. So the consumer staples, having really lost consistency all the way back at the beginning of 2018, have stabilized around this 500 area. That really shows that it's been ranging for more than 3 years, and it's coming back up towards the upper side of that range at present. Now, when we look at international markets, well, India has got improving standards of governance, and they have the potential to continue to perform over the medium term, but there is the uncertainty of the election. I wouldn't anticipate that the Nifty is going to move to a new all-time high until after the election, and that's assuming that Narendra Modi is successful in that election. But India has got the benefit of 50% of the population being under 26. And that's a massive number of people which have got the potential to drive consumer demand for the globe as the nation develops. So I think that's a very significant factor. The fact that China is now engaged in rebalancing and ending its program for reducing the impact of the shadow banking sector, that suggests that this part of this consolidation doesn't look like anything other than that. It's just a consolidation within a recovery scenario for the market. Then, when we look at the commodities complex, well, obviously, there is the question about global growth, and it would, I think, logically represent a negative. Well, oil prices continue to range here above the $65 area, and this represents the region of the trend mean. So, if we do get additional stimulus, then that is likely to translate into additional support for the commodity complex. And the continuous commodity index is continuing to steady from the lower side of its more than 3-year range. That is an unweighted index, so I think it's one of the better measures of the performance of commodities generally. Where we have had very clear action in here today is in palladium. The price there has been performing particularly well, but this is a very clear downward dynamic. It breaks the sequence of higher reaction lows. It is the largest pullback we've seen in the context of this move up from 1800 to just shy of 1600 since August. And this suggests a peak of at least near-term significance, potentially medium-term significance, and almost certainly at least a reversion back towards the mean. So that would suggest that this move of a clear outperformance is over for at least the near term. Then when we look at the gold price, it was down a bit in here today, but continues to firm from around this $1,275 area. And I suspect that this is just a consolidation in the region of the upper side of this long base formation. Despite the fact that gold prices haven't really been going anywhere for the last 3 weeks, the gold shares are back testing the upper side of their range. And despite being a little softer in here today, this has been a clear pattern of trending higher with a succession of higher reaction lows since the end of last year. If there is continued demand for bonds and compressing of yields, there's the serious potential for negative real interest rates. If we get negative real interest rates in an outright fashion, then I don't think there is a more bullish argument for why gold prices should appreciate, as should all real assets. And that's also the case for property, despite the fact that, and I think, well, rather than saying despite the fact that property prices are high, there's the clear potential that gold will outperform property by virtue of the fact that it is considerably cheaper relative to its peak values than property prices are today. Then I think it's worth keeping an eye on the dollar. The dollar index has been ranging with a mild upward bias and it continues to appreciate. So that is a clear vote that the problems in the rest of the world are worse than they are in the USA, despite the outlook for lower interest rates. There is a clear continued demand for dollars just on a safe haven asset basis. So that has held the sequence of higher reaction lows. Now, I think we do need to pay some consideration to what's going on in terms of Brexit. Right now, they're voting on 8 different potential outcomes, and the pound has been steadying against the dollar. It's been ranging really below the 133 area since July. There's been a mild upward bias over the last while. It is back above the trend mean. There is scope here for additional upside. When we look at the pound versus the euro, then it has been able to push through the 115 area and is appreciating further in here today. Well, this is a clear vote that the UK is going to remain closer to the EU than many people thought they were voting for. The simple fact of the matter is that the vote to leave the EU is being betrayed by by elected officials. And that is something that is going to have electoral consequences. But the electoral consequences are further down the line. There is, I think, the real potential that Theresa May is going to be forced to fall on her sword in order to prove a scapegoat for the those that do not wish to support the deal that she has negotiated, but will do so anyway if they can get rid of her. This has been the clear political animation that we've seen for the last couple of years. There was nobody willing to stand up and become prime minister as long as the unpalatable job of negotiating an exit with the EU was going to be up there. It was a job nobody wanted, so Theresa May stood up and took the job, which was completely thankless. And now that there's the prospect of the entire situation coming to an end, then they're going to get rid of her, heap all the blame on her for the solution that they've eventually adopt, and then go ahead as if nothing has happened. And that is a really clear indictment of the condition of politics in the UK. Well, the FTSE 250 index is the domestic market in terms of mid caps, and it is right in the region of the trend mean. There have been numerous occasions over the course of the last decade when it has traded below the trend mean, and on each of those it has bounced and then successfully pushed back above the mean, which I did have a question from someone in here today, is what do I mean by the trend mean? Well, it's a 200-day exponential moving average. On Bloomberg, it's going to be 40 weeks, but that's equivalent of 200 days. On in the chart library, we don't calculate different moving averages. It doesn't matter what chart you have up, it's always going to be in days, so you don't have to do the math. What we can see here is that this is a natural area for the index to consolidate, and then it needs to sustain a move back above the trend mean. So that's, I think, what people will be looking for. When we think about the massive uncertainties that Brexit has represented for the UK economy, there is the clear potential that Theresa May's deal is going to be passed, which is basically membership in all but name, and that represents a less of a disruption to the UK economy, since in fact it's no disruption at all, and that therefore has clear potential for for the pound to continue to rally at least until the next election, where I really do anticipate that there is going to be a massive revolt against the status quo. Well, I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.